The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
25, it's going to be a black male in a white t-shirt.
There's far too many of you dying.
14 million more
you
Americans
know
would
we
be
got
uninsured
to find
next year.
Way.
This deadly mass shooting
to bring some loving here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines.
Good morning.
Good morning,
and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're a congregation dedicated, like Thomas Paine was, to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutweiler, treasurer of our Board of Trustees, and wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. Many of you may have heard of Project 2025. It's a 900-page plan for a realignment of our government along theocratic and autocratic lines. And today, we will look at just three of the many subjects addressed in this document through the lenses of the writings of our namesake, Thomas Paine, and through our UU principles. Thomas Paine, although now considered only an adjacent UU, was a luminary whose works and points of view greatly align with UU philosophy. And I, for one, am happy that our congregation chose our name out of respect and admiration for him. Until this past year, UUs were guided by seven principles, which we still display in our lobby. These and the six sources have been replaced in Article 2 of our association's bylaws with a set of values centered on love. For the discussion today, we are going to rely on the seven principles and the six sources as touchstones for evaluating the three subjects that we have chosen from Project 2025. We're going to do this in a panel format. Joanne Walker will introduce each subject as presented in Project 2025. I will suggest what Thomas Paine, if he were with us here today, might have thought on the same subject based on his writings. And Linda Weaver will discuss what our UU principles and sources tell us about each subject. The Soul Matters theme for September is living love through the practice of invitation. And today, I invite you to join us in the practice of lovingly applying our namesake's ideas and our UU principles to a document that is born out of a very different religious and philosophical vision. Now, Joanne Walker will light the chalice while I read words from Reverend Gretchen Haley. We gather to draw the circle. In a world that feeds on moral outrage, we are here to cultivate moral courage. In a time that prizes picking sides, we gather to draw a wider circle. And in a culture that teaches us to get for what we give and to ask, what's in it for me? We come to practice generosity and to remember that we are all in this together. In the midst of life's bitterness, we choose to sing, to give thanks, to laugh together, and to be keepers of beauty, to offer a place of belonging for all who come in gladness and in pain, to resist the push of the next moment and the next, to slow down, to breathe more deeply, to feel a part of something greater for this hour and in this space. Let us be the change we wish to see. Come, let us worship together. And now, as Joanne lights the peace lamp, please repeat after me. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Our gathering song today is hymn number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. The lyrics and music are by Louise Ruspini, and this version is performed by the First Unitarian Church of Baltimore.
Okay, I'm Linda Weaver, Vice President here at TPUF, serving on the board. As an introduction to our service today, for folks of all ages who may be gathered here and on Zoom, we're going to show a short video introduction to Project 2025. Take it away, Mike.
Hey there, who are you?
Oh, just the most important document in our country's history.
You mean the Constitution?
Nope.
The Declaration of Independence?
Yes, again.
The Federalist Papers?
The Federalist, what? No, even more important than whatever you just said. Now sit right here and I'll tell you all about me. I'm just a little paper for the ages, a way to set the government straight. A short 887 pages on how to make America great. Again, by forcing through the president's agenda, removing all of those who disagree, replacing with our loyal party members, and reclaim our great country. In sum, give power to the president to authorize the government to legislate morality and wrestle back normality from Marxist ideologies that infiltrate our policies like gender, race, or anything woke. We're gonna abolish the Department of Education, turn the swearing in into a coronation. America's great salvation will arrive with Project 2025.
Coronation? You mean like a king?
No, it's called the Unitary Executive Theory. It gives the next president unchecked power to do whatever they want.
So, a king?
Oh, let's not get hung up on semantics. Here's how it's gonna work. Once that we've started the transition, and no one's left to tell us to wait, we'll go through every policy position, get rid of all the language that we hate, like civil rights, diversity, and unions, and pronouns to mention but a few. Defunding any liberal institutions that dare question what we do.
I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court.
Oh, the Supreme Court. That's a good one. Now, where was I? Abortion will be pretty much illegal. and reproductive rights will be gone. We'll get back to the biblical ideal that a family means a daddy and a mom with kids. Repeal the crazy climate regulations that get in the economy's way, with everyone reporting to their stations on Inauguration Day. When we give power to the president to authorize the government to legislate morality, expelling abnormality like godless ideologies, protecting inequalities like gender, race, and anything woke, we're gonna abolish the Department of Education. Convert the melting pot into a Christian nation. The stage is set, and we'll be going live in 2025.
I can't seriously say all that.
Wanna bet? Come on, let's crack me open.
Page 124.
Make more nuclear weapons.
Page 257.
End the war on fossil fuels.
Page 214.
No more gun violence protections.
Page 298.
Or feeding hungry kids at our schools.
Turn to page 5.
Ban offensive books from the classroom.
563.
Make it hard to register to vote.
Page 449.
Dismantle Medicare. Kill off the grizzly bear. Delete the term sexual orientation, gender equality, awareness, and sensitivity. Diversity, equity, inclusion, abortion, reproductive health, and reproductive rights out of every rule, regulation, contract, grant, and piece of federal legislation that exists. And that's an actual quote. And that, my friend, is only the beginning of how this makes America great. You'll be so overwhelmed with all the winning that you won't know what you've lost till it's too late.
Wait! This doesn't sound great at all.
No?
No, it sounds like a f***ing nightmare.
Well, I guess if you wanted to, there are still some things you can do to stop it.
Like what?
Well, if you vote to save democracy and stand against autocracy and tell your friends and family, enough with this insanity. We fought too long to part with these essential civil liberties like privacy and equity and bodily autonomy. And what defines a family? Equality and empathy. And we're not going back. And maybe we can stop this radical abomination. The future all depends on your participation. That's the way democracy will thrive. America was made for you and me, so let's defend our freedom and our dignity. Now raise your voice and let's keep hope alive in 2025, now vote!
Oh, that's right. We're going to do the children's recessional now. So sorry. Ready? I'm not going to sing into the mic, though. All right, ready?
Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go.
Okay, so back to Project 2025. I'm sure anyone who watches the news has heard that term. And maybe wondered exactly what it was, what it entailed. And some people have actually read all 800 and some pages, right, Joanne?
Excuse me.
I stand corrected. And they have read all those pages. Some of us have read the Cliff Notes. And actually, I do have the document on DocuSign. However, I have not read every single page. But what is it? It's the 2025 Presidential Transition Project. It's a political initiative published by a conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, in 2022. And it is the plan for the winner of the presidential election this year for when they take power in 2025. Okay, the project aims to promote conservative and right-wing policies to reshape the United States federal government and consolidate executive power under the president. Critics have characterized Project 2025 as an authoritarian Christian nationalist plan to steer the US toward autocracy. Legal experts have said it would undermine the rule of law, separation of powers, separation of church and state, and civil liberties. Although Project 2025 cannot legally promote a presidential candidate without endangering its 501c3 tax-exempt status, many contributors are associated with one candidate. The Heritage Foundation, let's give you a little background on what the Heritage Foundation is. They were established in 1973. Its mission is to advocate for public policies rooted in principles of free enterprise, limited government, individual liberty, traditional American values, and a strong national defense. In 1981, it published Mandate for Leadership, a comprehensive policy guide that outlined conservative solutions to a wide array of national issues, including economic policy, healthcare, education, and foreign affairs. Through various programs, including internships, fellowships, and leadership seminars, the foundation seeks to cultivate a new cadre of policymakers, including candidates for appointment to federal courts, and who are well-versed in conservative principles. Also in 1981, Southern Baptist pastor Tim LaHaye founded the Council on National Policy. Early participants included Paul Weyrich, Phyllis Schlafly, there's a name from the past, and Richard Vigeri. Organization presidents have included Nelson Bunker Hunt of Dallas, Amway co-founder Richard DeVos, Betsy DeVos, sound familiar? Of Michigan, Pat Robertson of Virginia Beach, and former Cabinet Secretary Edwin Meese. While the Heritage Foundation and CNP are separate entities, their relationship is close and complementary. The Heritage Foundation is more publicly visible and focused on policy research and advocacy, and the CNP operates more secretively as a networking organization. There's a significant overlap in leadership between the organizations. Notably, William Walton, the Walton family, Walmart, serves as both the president of the CNP board and a trustee of the Heritage Foundation. Jim DeMint, a former president of the Heritage Foundation, is on the CNP board. On October 14, 2020, the Washington Post reported that the overtly partisan political nature of videos recorded by CNP of several meetings in February and August 2020 raised potential issues of compliance with federal election laws and charity rules. Project 2025 was more than 40 years in the making, and it is surfacing now as a master plan by the Heritage Foundation, the Council on National Policy, and others to reshape the government and the political landscape of the United States. With that, we will begin our discussion.
It's on. Okay. The first topic that we picked was religion. Project 2025 presents a comprehensive position favoring the establishment of a state religion. The argument is such that a framework could significantly alter the relationship between government and faith in society. Proponents of this initiative contend that aligning governmental policies with a specific religious tradition can foster a sense of unity and shared purpose among citizens. They believe that a state religion can serve as a moral compass, guiding both individual behavior and public policy towards a set of values that reflect the community's cultural heritage. The advocates argue that the incorporation of religious principles into governments can enhance social cohesion, encouraging citizens to engage in civic duties and contribute positively to the community. By promoting a common set of beliefs and ethical standards, Project 2025 posits that a state religion can help mitigate divisions and conflicts that often arise in pluralistic societies. This alignment is seen as a way to strengthen national identity as it roots the populace in a shared tradition and history. Project 2025's position on the establishment of a state religion is a version of nationalism, an ism that leads to conflict, infringes upon people's rights, marginalization of people and groups that do not subscribe to the official faith, and often creates xenophobia and isolationism. Consider the plight of the Uyghurs in China, the Muslims in India, and the Christians and Jews in Iran. Project 2025's advocacy for a state religion goes directly against the, quote, I'm going to quote it, so you know I'm quoting it, original terms of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights, documents that the current Supreme Court majority argues are to be taken literally in the context of the time that they were written. In a country where most of the original settlers left England and other parts of Europe to escape the oppression of state religions, Project 2025 fails to even consider the risks of intertwining religion with state power and the possibility that it could lead to the erosion of democratic principles and individual rights. Project 2025 completely ignores the implications of the loss of religious freedom in a country which has considered itself the bastion of true democracy.
So Thomas Paine wrote, quote, as to religion, I hold it to be the indispensable duty of every government to protect all conscientious professors thereof, and I know of no other business which government hath to do therewith. For myself, I fully and conscientiously believe that it is the will of the Almighty that there should be a diversity of religious opinions among us. In Common Sense, he wrote, my own mind is my own church. All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human inventions set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. Paine emphasized reason as the means to effective government and showed in The Age of Reason, Part One, and elsewhere, that organized religion was man-made and unreasonable, witnessing firsthand England's use of the church to wield the king's power, Paine believed it essential to keep religion out of government.
So, what do our UU principles and seven sources say about this? Well, first, the first five principles are one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Two, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Three, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Four, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And the fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. These principles are incompatible with the establishment of a state religion. We live our principles within a living tradition of wisdom and spirituality drawn from sources as diverse as science, poetry, scripture, and personal experience. One, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Two, words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Three, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Four, Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Five, humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. And six, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
The second topic that we chose was executive power. One of the most striking examples of Project 2025 is its plan to promote the unitary executive theory while simultaneously gutting the system of checks and balances set forth in our Constitution. The U.S. system of separation of powers and checks and balances has long protected Americans' personal freedoms and sheltered us from authoritarianism. A government with a unitary executive would consolidate all power in the president and render the other two branches of government, the legislative and judicial, as mere shells of what they have been for the last 237 years. Project 2025 asserts that the president should be able to suspend, abrogate, or circumvent laws or regulations that they believe could hinder response to an economic, public health, or international relations crisis. Moreover, it would eliminate the civil service and replace civil servants with presidential puppets rather than the experts that the country has come to rely upon. Imagine filling key positions in the Department of Defense with a group of warmongers. Further, Project 2025 would completely end the independence of federal agencies such as the FBI and the Department of Justice. These agencies would be directed by the president to do their bidding and would likely be used against dissenters and political enemies. It would basically memorialize the concept, the current concept of demonizing those who disagree with the sitting president, making them the other, an element that must be quashed and neutralized. Finally, this unitary executive system, coupled with the almost all-encompassing immunity recently bestowed upon a president by the Supreme Court, would result in government at the whim of a president. Consider that a president might suspend the 25th Amendment, which provides a process to replace a disabled person, a disabled president. There would be no way to stop such a president, whether they are physically disabled, mentally disabled, or both. Essentially, the United States will be no different than those countries we have criticized in the past for being democracies in name only.
Now for Thomas Paine's thoughts on this. Paine, like John Locke, almost a century before him, believed that government derives legitimacy through the will of the governed. Paine advanced the idea in his pamphlet, Common Sense, first published in January 1776. The pamphlet quickly became the most popular American publication ever per capita at the time. In Common Sense, Paine went to great lengths to argue against monarchy. Paine wrote, quote, "There is something exceedingly ridiculous in the composition of monarchy." Paine proceeded to give compelling arguments against monarchy, and particularly against hereditary monarchies, and specifically the British monarchy, even as it was constrained by the Magna Carta, the British House of Lords, and the House of Commons. Paine wrote that it should be said that in America, the law is king. Thomas Paine's thoughts and writings influenced the drafters of the Declaration of Independence, which states that, quote, "governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." In the last day of the Constitutional Convention, September 18, 1787, it was reported that Philadelphian Elizabeth Powell had asked Benjamin Franklin, a mentor of Paine's and a delegate to the convention, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" And Franklin replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Paine would have almost certainly viewed Project 2025 as a serious threat to the republic he helped create in 1787, and the American people worked to perfect over the next 247 years.
Our fifth principle is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Heather Cox Richardson recently wrote, "When a political party has so thoroughly walled itself off from the majority, there are two options. One is to become full-on authoritarian and suppress the majority, often with violence. Such a plan is in Project 2025, which calls for a strong executive to take control of the military and the judicial system, and to use that power to impose their will. The other option is that enough people in the majority reject the extremists to create a backlash that not only replaces them, but also establishes a level playing field.
The third topic that we chose is education. Project 2025 presents a vision for education that prioritizes school choice, parental involvement, academic rigor, and reduced federal oversight. It would eliminate the Federal Department of Education and Title I, which provides funds to ensure that schools serving low-income students have additional resources than what can be provided by local tax revenue. Advocating for state control of educational programs, Project 2025 aims to create an educational landscape that encompasses conservative values by allowing state and local school authorities to tailor what is taught to children and youth in their most impressionable years. It seeks to inject a spirit of capitalism into our schools by expanding school choice, a concept that has already severely impacted public school systems. It seeks to add testing and metrics to our educational system when data already shows that charter schools generally are behind public schools in testing on many core subjects. Project 2025 also advocates for parental control in education, book banning, teaching cleansed versions of history, and exclusion of minority viewpoints will become a regular part of the educational systems in the United States. In fact, teaching most controversial subjects such as critical race theory, sexuality, evolution, and religion would be forbidden. Imagine having your child or grandchild attending a school where they are not taught about slavery or the Holocaust, or where books that many of us treasured in our school years are banned, not only from classroom instruction, but also from school libraries. If we ban books, don't teach subjects like evolution, and don't teach factual history, how will children develop critical thinking skills? These are the visions that Project 2025 has for the American educational system. While claiming that it will raise educational standards, Project 2025 would in effect cripple our educational system with the very indoctrination concepts that its authors purport to be correcting.
Thomas Paine was born in 1737 in England to a financially struggling family. Thomas Paine had to quit school at age 13 to labor as an apprentice in his father's corset business. While he had been a tradesman, he argued in The Rights of Man that the trades could inhibit the natural genius of the individual, especially in a society and economy like Great Britain at the time, where a great many families were unable to educate their children at all. Roughly 40% of men and 50% of women were illiterate. Paine believed that proper education would prevent the rise of monarchy and aristocracy, which he believed were expressions of ignorance and overly concentrated wealth. Paine had a very specific proposal that the government allow for each child 10 shillings a year for the expense of schooling for 6 years, which will give them 6 months schooling each year, and a half crown a year for paper and spelling books. Paine got very specific with some of his proposals. And proponents of school vouchers have glommed on to this writing by Thomas Paine, saying, see, he was for charter schools, he was for vouchers, you know, just give everybody a set amount and, you know, they'll take care of the education. However, James Stillwagon, a professor of philosophy at Iona College, maintains that Paine's proposal bears no relationship to modern voucher schemes. Paine's goal, according to Stillwagon, was to ensure a healthy democracy by reducing inequities within social interactions, of which education was and is a part. Stillwagon asserts that Paine would oppose modern voucher programs because they take power away from the government and place it instead in the hands of private entities who have no interest in the common good. Paine did not live to see the Pennsylvania Free Public Schools Act of 1834, which established a state-funded public school system, of which I am sure he would have approved. As Paine was a staunch opponent of slavery, he would not have approved of segregated public schools, nor the private schools that thrived after desegregation and court-ordered busing. He would not have approved of government funds supporting such institutions at the expense of public schools.
Our fourth principle is free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Banning books, dictating a curriculum that excludes controversial topics and whitewashes history is not a responsible search for truth and meaning. The hypocrisy of Project 2025, advocating for raising educational standards and rigorous testing, is exposed when we see the results of standardized testing generally show that most charter schools and religious schools perform significantly below the public schools.
So, in conclusion, we have only touched on three elements of Project 2025. There are many other elements of Project 2025 that address wealth and tax policy, workers' rights, the environment, immigration, disaster response, women's rights, LGBTQ plus rights, voting rights, and election processes that most you use, and Thomas Paine, were he alive today, would find anathema. It is very important that you use, in covenant with our fifth principle, exercise our right to vote and support the democratic process and the republic that Thomas Paine, Ben Franklin, and our founding fathers worked hard to create.
So that ends our presentation, and we're going to end it with a song, the Declaration of Independence, performed by the Fifth Dimension.
These truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights,
that among these just
to right themselves by abolishing the forms to stay or a custom.
But we're no long train of abuses and usurpations. Pursuing will be the same object. Defensive are designed to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right. It is their duty to draw.
Now we've come to the portion of our service that we call Matters of the Heart, where we can hear from those of you who may wish to speak. And Mike McNeil will give instructions on this. Most of you are familiar with the process. Joanne's going to set up the microphone there. We're not going to have a musical meditation here, but I would ask you to just honor a moment of silence to gather your thoughts. And please, as you're speaking, be brief and remember our UU principles. We're going to wrap things up with hymn number 123, Spirit of Life by Carolyn McDade, performed by the First Parish Brewster Unitarian Universalist Church. The words will appear on the screen. Please feel free to sing along. You can rise and move to the side if you would like. As UUs, we may argue passionately over the wording of principles or values in our bylaws, but outside there is a world working aggressively to tear apart much of what we hold dear. In this one respect at least, we should commit to being attentive, vigilant, even woke, and determined to exercise the rights of man, as Thomas Paine's book was titled, and woman, that our namesake Thomas Paine has bestowed on us and our fellow Americans. It is our patriotic duty and our duty of conscience. Joanne Walker will extinguish the chalice and the peace lamp as I read the words from Reverend Audette Fulbright Folsom. We are not done. Do not think we are finished. Oh no, we will never be finished, never just done, until the light of justice is lit behind every eye. We have come to take back the world that is the inheritance of better children, better lovers, better days. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of independence, democracy, and justice that we will carry with us into the world. Our closing song is hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land. The words are by Barbara Zanotti, the music by Carolyn McDade. The title and lyrics echo a quote from Thomas Paine's Common Sense, "We have it in our power to make the world over again." This version, my favorite, with some revised words and an added verse, is performed by Mo Mack in concert and with John and Cynthia Bowling. The lyrics will appear on the screen, and you're welcome to stand and sing along.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. Where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. Where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an air.